This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I love the person on the text line who just said, "What about Cookie Monster?" Because you know what I thought of. What about Dinks?
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Hey, listen, Cookie Monster deserves his flowers too. But really, he'd just be mad because he'd be like, "Why are you giving me flowers and not cookies?"
What about Dinks?
Yeah, what about Cookie Monster? What about Dinks? What about 5 on it?
Johnny! 5
on it! Cubs reliever Daniel Palencia failed to close out the ninth inning with a 7-6 lead over the Marlins on Monday. This is what manager Craig Counsell said post-game about Palencia's performance.
You know, he got tail 0-2, and I think he was trying to throw a slider for a ball, and he just hung it a little bit. So the kid put a good swing on it and hit it, did a nice job. You know, I think he probably got a little tired, honestly, as the inning went on. He's been working really hard and doing a heck of a job, and probably ran out of a little bit of gas there and the walk, and we had a base hit.
Was there anything you liked about him against that special lineup versus Porter?
Porter's going to go on the injured list. He's got a left oblique issue, so he's unavailable.
No!
Who do you want to see in the ninth of the next Cubs save situation?
We went over it a little bit earlier, but I still feel like I'm with Palencia simply because he throws gas. Gas in 9. The end.
If you can't throw the gas for strikes, though, is it? I mean,
he purposefully tried to not throw a strike and still threw a strike, though.
No, but did he purposely not throw a strike to the previous batter before the walk-off?
Don't worry about that. Yeah. I do think a lot of this can be fixed with, like, simple discussion and film study and, like, hey, your pitch selection there was not your top. You can do this. Okay. Gas in 9.
So Daniel Palencia is your answer. I'm going in a different direction. Palencia has been great this season, no doubt. Give me Brad Keller.
Yeah,
give me Brad Keller.
We love Brad Keller. We just love him in different ways.
You love him in all the ways, apparently.
I love him being the trustworthy one. Like, he's my glad I called that guy. Not to go Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore all over again, but he's my glad I called that guy.
Well, if he's the one you have the most trust in, why wouldn't you want him to pitch the most crucial inning of the game?
Because I want, what if the crucial inning comes in like the fourth?
Hey, I'm with that.
If it's in the fourth, there's panic.
Well, if it's in the fourth, is it that crucial?
Yes.
No, in the fourth.
Something horrible has happened.
With the Cubs offense, if it's in the fourth, that means things have gone horribly wrong.
That's my point.
I mean, you'd have to, I can't even envision a situation in the fourth inning, because that batter, whoever he is going to come up probably 2, maybe 3 more times if we're in that kind of a situation, is what I'm saying.
He's my glad I called that guy. That's how I manage a bullpen.
We'll agree to disagree.
Panic.
5 on it. Which was a bigger disappointment last night? The Cubs wasting Miguel Amaya's 5 RBI night against the Marlins, or the White Sox wasting right-hander Davis Martin's 2-run, 4-hit performance in a career-high 7 1/3 innings against the Mariners?
Do you guys know how I feel about Davis Martin? Like, I was all gung-ho about, like, he was going to be the opening day starter, but then Davis Martin wasn't on the same page as me and was like, I have a setback. I can't do that. And this wasn't a conversation we had. These are just 2 pieces of information that happened at different times. I am thrilled that Davis Martin is doing his thing. But frankly, the way that the White Sox lost, I think you have to go with the Miguel Amaya 5 RBI performance being more wasted, because unfortunately, like, that's going to happen in life where the Sox starters will deserve better at times, correct? Like, you can see that coming.
It's happened all season.
Fair enough. And it's something that Mark Grody and I have both discussed separately. For me, it was birthed out of the phrase Jesse Schultz deserved better, which at the time he did. He did indeed.
And now?
I mean, in this case, it was Davis Martin. But when you consider that Seattle lineup, which offensively is strong, like a Cal Raleigh homer, the Dylan Moore single in the ninth inning, you know, that ends up helping them win. That makes sense. These things are going to happen to the White Sox. So I understand. It's definitely wasting a 5 RBI day for Miguel Amaya.
I could go either way on this, but because the Sox offense didn't even do anything until the very, very, very end of the game, I'm going to say it's the wasting of the Davis Martin game, because it's not even that he went 7-3. It's the fact that he had to go 7-3 to keep the game tied, you know, to keep the game close, to keep it 1-0. And then Julio Rodriguez says, grand slam me. And the game's pretty much over at that point. But Michael A. Taylor came up to the plate as the tying run in the ninth.
Yeah.
And I thought for a second that a guy who wasn't hitting 200 might do something improbable, but he did the most probable thing there was to do.
But also, like, if I tell you, oh, Julio Rodriguez was the reason the Seattle Mariners won, you wouldn't be shocked by that.
No, I wouldn't be shocked by it. You're right. You're right. It's just to get all the way to that point where when your team is down big, all you're thinking about is how can they come back? And then when they're actually in a position to come back, you have this faint belief. No matter how bad the record is, no matter how bad they've been offensively, that they might pull it off this one time. And that's what disappoints. That's what makes it. Like with the Cubs game, I was like, I don't know why Daniel Valencia's in this game, but he is throwing gas. And I was like, the Cubs are going to score more runs tomorrow. I don't know if they're going to get 7-3 out of anyone for the White Sox. So what I'm saying to say all this is, I overthought
Jonathan,
the whole thing.
I feel like Gannon has like a 7-3 in him in a game.
Did you say Gannon?
Gannon. That's how Ozzy always says his name, Jonathan Cannon.
Oh,
it's
okay.
So much more fun to say Gannon.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I just, when it comes to the Mariners and they're first in the AL West even.
Andrew Vaughn hit a single to set up a bases loaded situation. That's when I thought magic is in the air.
Davis Martin falls under the Jesse Shultons deserve better award.
Fair.
Here's a fun fact too as well about the Cubs catchers. Most 5 RBI games from a catcher in a season. Tied for first, 1953 Dodgers with 5, 1951 Dodgers with 5, and tied in third is the 2025 Chicago Cubs with 4 games with 5 RBIs from a catcher.
Don't the Cubs have, aren't they up there as far as like hits or offensive production out of the catching spot? Did I catch that, pun intended, on Marquee last night? There was a graphic. I didn't take a picture of it, but I feel like that was also part of the discussion last night, was just the offensive production out of the catcher position as a whole being high.
Yes.
Relative to the rest of the league.
That is true.
On Monday, White Sox third baseman Miguel Vargas was named American League Player of the Week. Which player on the Sox current roster do you think has the highest ceiling?
See, this is a tricky question.
It is.
Because the Sox have a lot of guys who have not lived up to their potential or whose potential might be past them. They might be past their prime.
Fair.
I'm going to go with Miguel Vargas just because of the way he might have one of those seasons this year that makes you believe you have a piece that you got in a trade that you can believe in. I'm going to roll with Miguel Vargas. As much as I want to roll with a pitcher, my hopes and dreams for position players in the White Sox far exceed that of a pitcher.
I'm in a dark place here.
How dark?
It's Luis Robert on another team.
Well, but is that?
Yep. He's on the Sox current roster, and I have a feeling that once he gets traded, he is going to be the Luis Robert I am more familiar with from his earlier seasons of life.
So his batting average will be over 200 is what you're saying?
Correct.
He'll probably hit 30-plus bombs.
And I just remember the glide effortlessly across the outfield.
He still does a lot of that.
He does. That man can get to a ball. So, yeah, I think it's Luis Robert on another team. But also, I think I'm missing a bunch of Sox pitchers because they're all hurt.
Or in the minors. Just not up yet.
Smith and Schultz, yeah.
Yeah, so but I don't want to project out that far.
They're not current roster thought process guys.
They should be. 5
on it. In advance of today's NFL owners meeting, the haters known as the Green Bay Packers submitted a revised anti-tush push proposal that bans all pushing of the runner. The question is, will the tush push survive?
So, Layla, it's pretty simple to me. The tush push has no chance of surviving. The Eagles, however, running for a yard on fourth or third down or whenever they need it, that will survive, tush push or not. They're too good. The offensive line is too strong. And their quarterback is an Olympic lifter. He squats houses, small houses, but the houses all the same.
Is there anything that man can't do? I'm just saying. That's my issue with this. Also, you know what's really funny is the haters could have been the Bears or something because they can't run it either. But did the Bears mess with this? No. You know why? because it's a football play and this is dumb. The NFL wanted a way to rule it out. I'm totally with Mike Florio and his conspiracy on this, which is that the NFL wanted to entice another team to be able to put forth this proposal. Here's my other issue with this in this imaginary scenario. If that is the case, that the NFL did do that, then what do you get as a reward? Is it more calls benefiting your team?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
How are they paying that off exactly?
You are deep in your conspiracy theory bag, and I don't hate it.
I'm not going to just do a favor for somebody else when I don't believe in also, it without getting something in return.
Will it break your heart when you see the Bears did vote to ban the tush push?
No, because I also, as a runner of a team, would do the same thing. I'm like, wait, can my team do this? No. Oh, then it's illegal. But at the same time, as a football observer, which is what I actually am in life, no, I think this is stupid. It's a creative play that they drew up that other teams can't defend, and that's their problem, well, not mine.
Is it stupid or is it not stupid? Because if you did own the team, you're saying you would vote against the tush push.
Because I'm voting for my best interests. I'm acknowledging my bias. But as somebody who just loves football, no, I think this is stupid.
I think I'm kind of with you on that. I just think it's stupid in general.
It's like if I played football, I would draft myself in fantasy football, obviously. It's a principle. When my team is in the NCAA tournament, I have to have them winning a game. But in this case, no. As a football observer, this is dumb, and the tush push should be legal.
What's your position? I like Robbie's question. What's the position, Layla?
Yeah, the problem is I would play linebacker in football, but that's not a position you can draft. So then you just draft your own defense.
Wait, why linebacker?
Because your job is to wreck everybody else's life. Full speed.
I don't like that figuratively, because it makes me think you want to wreck everyone's life in real life.
And listen, that star burns bright and quick. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Wow.
Marshall, okay. you got a position if you're able to live in the life of the NFL.
Absolutely. Backup quarterback. Let me hold this clipboard and collect these millions. What are we talking about?
You're Chase Daniel.
I'm Chase Daniel. What are we talking about? I hope I never play. I hope I never have to play.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm like, give me some snaps, and I'm going to run at something full speed. And I'm probably going to miss the tackle. But at least I tried.
Ray, Robbie, listen, it's very simple, Robbie Ray. I'm just trying to get through the preseason. That's when I got to actually take snaps and get hit. Other than that, I'm hoping I never have to do anything on the field.
If I were a quarterback, I'd be like the handoff specialist. Like, oh, you need me to come in and give this ball to somebody specialist. Else? Wow. Let me run this wishbone offense for you.
NFL owners will vote today on whether players can play flag football in the Olympics, a resolution that reportedly has a lot of momentum to pass. Would you really tune in to watch Olympic flag football?
Of course. It's the Olympics. That thing's going to be on. They're going to have like Snoop Dogg commentating. It's the Olympics. Everybody's going to watch because it's the Olympics.
I know you still have to go, Layla, but I would just, in response to you, bringing up Snoop Dogg, I would watch for Snoop Dogg more than I would for the flag football.
It's like
but
that
that's
movie
just
he had on Amazon Prime, right? He might be coaching for all we know. I mean, this is one of those sports that clearly, who's challenging them in flag football?
Exactly.
Canada, Australia?
Maybe Canada.
We're talking competing. America would run them over. We have all of the best players.
We used to say the same thing about basketball, but let me tell you something. Next Olympics, it's looking real dicey out here.
But I'm talking about, like, there's basketball played in other countries, but, like, more prevalent. But
I know you're too young to remember the Dream Team, but if you remember the Dream Team and how it used to be and how what we've gotten to...
There was a reason it was called the Dream Team, Robbie.
There's no...
Other
these guys
countries
were,
didn't stand a chance.
They were getting beat by 70 and asking for autographs after the game.
I'm saying, like, what country actually poses a real threat where it's within, like, two touchdowns? There's no other country in the world that has that.
I don't know who decided to say yes to this. The idea of flag football in the Summer Olympics. And furthermore, in America, you could put football on a Sunday morning at 4 a.m. And if there's some element of live to it, people will watch. These
and they'll
the
gamble
rules.
On it.
I don't make the rules. I don't know how you get an international competition of flag football, though. I'm very curious. I think this is just an excuse to try to get America more medals or something.
Ah, from the text line, 312, Nigeria, Bahamas, Jamaica, Canada.
Oh, Nigeria has a ton of
they're all getting
skilled football players.
They're getting destroyed by the U.S.
Nigeria has great football players in the NFL.
There's Nigerian Americans, and I'm saying those guys, if they want to play for Nigeria, that's actually a great Good job, 3-1-2.
I don't want to, like, but like, let's talk about the starting lineup here. Okay, who's starting? Patrick Mahomes? Okay, we have Justin Jefferson. We have Ja'Marr Chase. Okay, we're going to win. Like, it's over. We have all the best players.
Caleb Williams is a starter.
Well, we were talking about, too, the Pro Bowl games, whatever that turned into. And Ray and I were talking backstage, as we like to say in our pre-show meeting. And he asked me what my favorite aspect was of watching all of that, because I did the whole day, because I had a show the next day I hosted. And I was like, really, it was tug of war. It was Marcus Spears talking about like the blowout of the shoe on the side in tug of war. Also, so, isn't that the most fun thing you could think of?
So not the star-studded event that was the flag football with all those NFL players. That was not the best part of it.
I enjoy when athletes do athlete things where they're just hanging out and doing things that I can't do.
And the most intriguing part of it was not the flag football. I just want to be clear.
It was when the flag football got mixed up. It was when like different people were playing quarterback that weren't quarterback, and like your quarterback was a receiver and your receiver was a defensive back. That's when it got fun, was when everybody was playing out of position. So yeah, that still doesn't help, does it?
No, tug of war was the biggest fun part of that, wasn't
and
it?
And watching guys flip into the ball pit or the foam pit or whatever that was.
There's an adult field day coming up soon that I was invited to participate, either as you could be like a submit a team or a free agent. And I was like, I don't think I can do it.
Adult field day?
I don't think I can do it.
Where is this? Tell
Herb
me
Howard
more.
Sent me a message. I think he sent it to Lawrence too. I don't think Lawrence was interested.
Lawrence is giving the thumbs up.
Is he gonna
he got
it?
The message. You gonna do it?
Yeah,
thumbs
he's with
down
me.
From
yeah,
Lawrence.
You know what's gonna happen is a bunch of like track ringers are gonna come in. You know, dudes who won state and stuff. They're gonna come in and be like, let's smoke everybody at this thing we're still incredibly good at. Mm. And I don't blame them. If I could run, I would do the same, but I can't. I can't run. I'm slow as hell. Are we just, we're just silent on
wait,
that?
Wait, was this the fifth one?
That was it?
Oh,
yeah, was
my
it.
Bad. I thought there was
we're
another
out of time.
Question.
We did thought, well with our timing. Look at that.
Much better than yesterday. Much better than yesterday.
Yeah, speaking of that, we have a programming note for you. I know that last week, because of the Seth Wickersham article breaking, we did not get to the rest of our categories of the schedule. As in, you know, Ben Johnson should cook, take the L. Other categories that I've forgotten off the top of my head that are written down. Point is, we're going to get back to it, but unfortunately, it is going to be when Marshall gets back from this wedding he's going to in Savannah.
Yeah, not my wedding. I just want, I'm still single out here. Ha ha, ha ha.
So not only will we get an update from that wedding, but when he gets back, we will take on the thrilling conclusion of categorize the games for the Bears schedule, because we didn't get to do that.
I look forward to it.
I'm sorry,
and hopefully
that
we don't forget.
I'm sorry that it's so late in the process, but I feel like we were cooking and then we had to like wait.
We'll have more knowledge about the games by then.
You think so?
No, but it sounded good when I said it.
All right, you seem very confident. At least we know Joe Tooney got extended.
7-10.
There it is. So we have more coming up here on Rahimi and Harris on the Score. Now that we got done with five on it, what's next is our friend Nick Friedel. He is back to talk some NBA playoffs. I think we got to ask him about the Bulls, too.
Do we have to?
Oh, we have to. That's next on the Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's go out to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline on Rahimi and Harris. Download the Circa app today, and that is where we find our friend. He is the Odyssey Sports NBA insider, Nick Friedel. Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. We put your safety first and everything else second. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Hey, Nick, how are you?
Layla, Marshall, it's great to be with y'all. And one more time, we're here to talk about Tibbs. I mean, I can't believe it. It's like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Man, that is the absolute truth. I feel like your relationship with Tibbs is a separate entity, also equally interesting and dramatic. And then there's Tibbs' story arc with the Knicks. Perhaps it is similar. What do you think about all of this?
Layla, he's got a perfect team for that personality, because he's got a bunch of guys who think just like he does, which is the way he always wanted to play it. But the fact that now they get through the Celtics and they're a step away from the finals, what's most interesting to me is we sit here on the brink of that thing starting, the Eastern Conference Finals, is if he gets them through this portion and gets them into the finals, all that talk about Tibbs being only an A to B coach, it's gone, because now he's on the verge of getting his team to where a lot of people, I mean, we'd start in Chicago, but there were a lot of people in Minnesota who didn't think that they'd ever even get to this point. So he'll tell you that he doesn't pay attention to all the chatter and he doesn't pay attention to what's said or written. Well, that's all BS. So he knows, and I have no doubt that he is very proud of what they've accomplished to this point, but he knows they've got two more steps to take as they get started here against the Pacers.
I love the contrast of these two teams in the Eastern Conference Finals for so many different reasons, whether it's the history of the matchup, whether it's where these teams have been. Remember, the Knicks couldn't beat anybody that was actually good during the regular season. That was the narrative, and they are bending it backwards here in the playoffs. And then the Pacers, and people are like, oh, Tyrese Halliburton, he's overrated. That's from his peers. Not a large portion of his peers, but the most, 14% of the NBA players who were surveyed for that particular question. I just wonder how you see this series playing out.
I think the Knicks can actually do it. And the reason I believe it is because as great as Halliburton has been, Marshall, they don't have Jalen Brunson. And in these playoff series, especially late, I mean, hell, these teams saw each other a year ago. We know what happened. The Knicks just ran out of gas. I think it has been gigantic for them that they finished when they did and they got the break in the schedule. But the reason why I think the Knicks are just a little bit better is because Jalen Brunson is a little bit better player than he was a year ago. And, of course, they've added Towns and they've added Bridges. And Bridges, you want to talk about all the chatter leading into the playoffs. Oh, this guy's not the guy. Well, he has absolutely been the guy they've needed him to be in the postseason. Halliburton is really, really good, and he is taking his team to a different level. And they have a lot of auxiliary pieces with Rick Carlisle calling the shots where absolutely they can win this series. But the difference in this series to me is that the Knicks have the best player, and they've got the guy who has shown up time and again in the clutch. And when you have that guy combined with the other pieces around Brunson, I just think the Knicks are a little bit more than what the Pacers have, although I am fully expecting this series to go seven games.
You know, Nick, we were talking, Marshall and I, a lot about not only the second apron, which I feel like Marshall's been casually researching on the side now for upwards of, what, 20 hours?
In total, 20 hours. I've been looking at it really strongly for 2 weeks, trying to figure out how do you build an NBA team in this era.
And the reason I say that is because we also heard Arturas Karnišovas famously at the All-Star break saying, or was it at the trade deadline?
One
of the two. Somewhere in mid-February.
Post-trade deadline.
Thank you. Saying, you know, you want 9 or 10 good players. I think Jalen Brunson arguably is a superstar, but perhaps the Knicks are the closest example we have to this. A team that in the modern CBA can succeed with maybe parts that were deemed unlikely by others together as a fit.
Layla, I like where your head is at, and I see the parallel. The problem is the Bulls don't have the level of players that the Knicks do.
Oh, I'm not even talking. I'm not even talking about the Bulls right now. I'm just saying if you're looking for that example, I will get to the Bulls with you. Yeah. If you think that I'm not talking to the Bulls about you on this phone call, you would be wrong.
Well, Nick, and just to your point, what you were saying to her, the point is Jalen Brunson's getting paid $26 million. I'm trying to make sure I got the numbers right. He was getting paid $26 million. He's making around $40 million at the end of this contract. He's got a player option for $43 million in the 28-29 season. Meanwhile, Josh Giddey's talking about making $30 million. Those two players aren't – no.
They're
no.
not the same.
Which of these is not like the other?
Right.
I mean, that really is where we're at. But to exactly what y'all are saying, that really is the difference between – the Knicks and every other team in this sequence, Layla. And I see what you mean. Of course, Jalen Brunson took so much less than he could have, which is why even more he's beloved the way that he is in and around New York City. But the Knicks have gotten the players that they feel best fit together under Tibbs. And I think that is a crucial part of this, because if you had guys that weren't about the day in and day out grind, then I don't even think they would have gotten to this part, even if Jason Tatum had gotten hurt. The one guy, as we go through kind of how these rosters got built, that I'm curious to see how he performs in this moment and in this spot is Towns. Because, guys, I never thought Karl Anthony Towns was a championship caliber player. I watched him in those years Tibbs was in Minnesota. I watched him play with Jimmy, and I was like, there's no way. Like, this is not the guy. That's why Jimmy was like, get me out of here. He didn't believe he was the guy that you can win titles with. So I was one of many when the Knicks and Tibbs made that move earlier this season when they acquired Towns and went, huh? Towns, are you kidding? You want to talk about somebody that can change the narrative, though? He's the guy. But, Layla, I understand what you mean. In this era, with the cap the way that it is, you have got to build the roster the best way you can with like-minded guys that are pulling in the right direction. The Knicks are right now. They believe in what Tibbs continues to sell them. But it's all well and good to talk about cap figures until you start breaking down talent. And Jalen Brunson is an incredible talent who keeps getting better and who took less. And when you have that combination, that is tough to beat.
Arguably the best contract in the league belongs to the New York Knicks in the form of Jalen Brunson. Nick Friedell on with us here on Raheem and Harris. Insider calls brought to you by Hyundai. Hyundai helps protect you and your family on the road. We put your safety first and everything else second. Knicks are Odyssey Sports NBA insider, but not just on the Eastern Conference, also the Western Conference. How do you like this matchup brewing now between OKC and Anthony Edwards and the Wolves?
Marshall, I just think OKC is a little bit better. They are so deep. They play defense unbelievably well, and they have the MVP. I know there's hype around Ant Edwards. There should be. The guy is awesome. He's gotten better every year. He certainly has the confidence to be able to deliver. And, I mean, when you knock off LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers, and then you get into the second round and you knock off the Warriors, albeit, of course, without Steph, but when you knock that team off with Draymond and with Jimmy, that confidence is only going to grow. That's all well and good. The Thunder have been the best team, in my opinion, along with the Celtics all year. We saw what happened to the Celtics after Tatum got hurt. I just think the Thunder, top to bottom, are the best team going. So it would surprise me a lot if the Thunder didn't close this series. But when you have a young team with Ant Edwards, who is rising in superstardom, and then you pair him with veterans like Randall, who absolutely has a chip on his shoulder because he got moved away from the Knicks, the place that he thought he would be, and Gobert, who is really, really playing well, well, you have the makings of a really strong series. I just think when you look at what's happening between these two teams, the Thunder have the depth to knock Minnesota down, and they have the star power in SGA to deliver the blows late when they need it. Usually, when you have that type of combination heading into a series, that team that has those weapons comes out on top.
Okay, so now here's the part, Nick, where I ask you about the Bulls. They end up losing the tragic behind-the-scenes coin flip to the Lakers, or to the Mavericks, rather, who end up getting that first overall pick. I've still got Luka on my mind, obviously, when I mention the Lakers. But the Mavericks get the first overall pick. How do you see the Bulls picking there at 12? Do you think there's a quality person available? And what are your thoughts on the end result of this past season?
I'll never understand fully why they continue this direction that they're on, Layla. Because they're not good enough. You need a star to build around in the league. The Bulls don't have one. I know that my man Stacey King and plenty of other Bulls fans, they all say, oh, what about Matas? What about Mazzellas? Maybe a few years from now, maybe he develops. But Layla, right now, they're just not there. As far as the draft goes, who can they get at 12? We'll see. After the picks 1 and 2 in this draft, I'm kind of like, all right, well, there are some solid prospects. But after Cooper Flagg and after Harper from Rutgers, you kind of go, I don't think there are many sure things. But it's like any other draft. There's always talent. It's just a matter of trusting that you can find it. Historically, over these last few years, the Bulls haven't found too much. So there shouldn't be that much hope or faith that things are going to turn around. But the talk about the tiebreaker and the way the lottery's balls bounced, that's all on the Bulls. Because when you are consistently playing in the middle and you're playing to get into the play-in, you get what you get. And the break didn't go their way, and they're just stuck. They are an irrelevant team that is built going nowhere right now. And that is the reality of the decisions they've made year after year that got them to this point.
Nick, we're up against it, but I got to ask you real quick, just the latest, what do you think makes the most sense for where will Giannis play next season?
Marshall, I would sum it up this way. If you were betting on will Giannis stay in Milwaukee or will he go somewhere else, I would bet on him being somewhere else. I don't know exactly where that place will be because it will depend on, I think, him saying, this is where I want to go, help me get there. But Giannis, as much as he wanted to stay in Milwaukee, he wanted to win. If you're being honest about the Bucks situation, especially in light of the Dame injury, they're not going to win, and they're not going to win for a while. So if I were Giannis and I wanted to win, I am out of there this summer.
All right.
Well, I'm glad to see that at least you and Tibbs are on the same wavelength again. That's good to know, Nick.
Layla, that is a wavelength that fluctuates day to day. Where we need to be right now.
Why do I feel like that is just the case with Tibbs in general? Wasn't it Jalen Brunson who said he accidentally texted Tibbs instead of the player group thread? So one of the Knicks players said that last year, and they were like, pray for me. And I was like, oh, this might not turn out well.
Doesn't sound like a good message was being thrown out there.
It was probably something about running around in practice, if I had to guess. Nick Friedel.
It always is with Tim.
Yeah, you have an idea of how practice is going to go. You're going to run 25 right. miles. Nick, thanks so much.
Bye, y'all.
Thanks, Nick. That was Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedel. You know him well. Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. We put your safety first and everything else second. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Coming up next, we're trying to see which rules are being, well, pushed through the NFL meetings.
I see what
right
you did
now.
There.
Yes. I'm sorry. It was just too obvious. So flag football has been discussed. The players might vote on that. We'll get the latest as far as the tush push discussion is concerned. And actually, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk has posted a story that probably deserves to be discussed. That was within the past hour. So I will give you the latest on that as well.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
So we know that meetings are growing out of the NFL ranks in Minneapolis, and that certain discussions were tabled, if you will, for the tush push, and that it was going to be revisited. Well, that time has come. It is now being revisited. But here's the thing. We still don't have any results yet of any votes that have come out of the meeting in Minnesota, and I still don't think that it's a play that should be illegal in the NFL.
I concur. Not only should it not be illegal in the NFL, but people should be getting the brain trust together from collective organizations to try to figure out how to stop it. The problem is, I don't know that they can stop it in terms of the majority of the time. So I think they need to just get better players, and so then they too can run the proverbial tush push.
Yeah, the issue is you have to have a strong-as-hell offensive line and a strong-as-hell quarterback, and if you don't have that, you're probably losing games for a lot of other reasons in the league, not just the fact that you can't get a short yardage play to work.
You know who has a stronger offensive line than they did last year?
The Bears.
Yeah! It feels good to say, right?
It absolutely does.
It's like you have visions of watching football that you haven't been watching the past few seasons. And it's the same way with some of this other stuff. So I like the Olympic thing. I know we touched on it briefly before, but flag football sounds like fun.
It sounds like fun, although I think for legitimate concerns, there is an issue when it comes to potential health of players. I love the idea of football players being able to play in the Olympic Games, but that has been some of the reported pushback that we have seen when it comes to the higher-ups in the league who maybe oppose it, is what is the injury risk to our best players? And I think that that is fair. I know it's a discussion that happens in the NBA, but when you consider that this is a different game from what they likely see, even though flag football is lower impact, it still requires some skills and a different way to move that might actually legitimately make that a concern.
So the flag football resolution establishes the rules and basic structures for how the NFL hopes to see the process of picking a flag football team work, subject to negotiations, of course, with the NFLPA and Olympics-related entities. They include permission for any player under NFL contract to participate in tryouts, a limit of one player per NFL team on each national team participating. So you got that? That's a big one. Only one player per team can participate. So my next question immediately, Layla, is who on the Bears do you want to see on the Olympic flag football team if you can only choose one?
It's got to be one of two.
Who are the two?
It's either Jalen Johnson, because we just saw him do it in the Pro Bowl games, or it's probably DJ Moore.
Not Rome?
In
2028?
DJ Moore loves to run after the catch. Even then, he's a former track guy in high school. I still think it would be fun to watch him.
Luther Burden III? Isn't that his whole thing? He's slippery?
Oh, yeah. All of those guys. But off the top of my head right now, as the Bears stand, yeah, I'd probably still say DJ Moore.
Also allowing, in addition, a team's designated international player to play for his home country. I don't know who the Bears' designated international player is off the top of my head. A purchase of league-wide insurance policies to provide injury protection for any player injured while participating in an authorized flag football activity related to the Olympics. A salary cap credit for any player who is injured. An expectation that Olympic flag football teams will establish medical staffs and field services that comply with NFL minimum standards. And a schedule that, quote, does not unreasonably conflict with an NFL player's league and club commitments, end quote. So that's what you have. This is going to be July 14th to July 30th of 2028. And that's when NFL players are off, so it shouldn't be that big of a commitment as far as the actual games themselves, but it's the lead up.
Sounds like it's a way for America to get another gold medal.
What if they didn't get a gold medal? How disappointing would that be?
If they didn't get a gold medal in flag football.
But because you have all these other international players that can play for other countries.
Oh, I'm aware of how it would happen.
And only here's the issue. If only one player per team can participate, does that mean only one team player per team can participate for the USC team or just in general for the Olympics?
That's it might mean in general for the Olympics. I don't know that they necessarily have
to represent. I know the answer to that. It's just a limit of one player per NFL team on each national team participating. So that means you could have Bears play for multiple teams. It would just be one for the Team USA and then one for Team Canada or Team Jamaica or Team Nate fill in the blank.
I love how all of us immediately went to Tory Taylor, except flag football doesn't have punters.
Facts. Definitely does not have punters.
So that's probably a flaw in the plan. But I like where we all went initially.
Also, I'm good with, like, what is it, the 4th and 25 or whatever it is that they want to do instead of the onside kick. And they think it's too gimmicky. I like that for the NFL.
I do too.
Like, we're declaring onside, you get to run your play.
Yeah. I don't mind that either. I think whatever way you want to try to convert that possession, you should be allowed to do so. But there's got to be an obvious disadvantage, and that would be one. This from Mike Florio as well. It is an answer and a response to the Arlington Heights discussion from yesterday. He posted this on Pro Football Talk earlier. Although the Bears recently said that they have shifted their focus from Chicago to Arlington Heights, the powers that be in the suburban village of Arlington Heights are essentially reciting Lee Corso's catchphrase. There's no done deal with the Bears, according to Arlington Heights Mayor Jim Tenaglia, which we've heard. But I think this is more of a formality than it is an actual, like, roadblock.
It took me a second for that to click, but that wasn't actually Lee Corso's catchphrase. It was the not so fast, right? That
yes.
I was listening for the catchphrase because I was like, wait, Lee Corso.
Yeah, it was definitely not so fast.
Okay.
I'm reading. And the quote is, when and if the Bears do make an announcement that they are coming to Arlington Heights with certainty, there will be a process that is going to begin, and there will be an enormous amount of opportunity for every resident and business owner to become educated and participate in all the dialogue that is going to happen, Tenaglia said during a village board meeting last night via Christopher Playcheck of the Arlington Heights Daily Herald. Quote, and this entire board, believe me when I tell you, we will all have something to say. And it will be wonderful or it won't be. We're all committed to work for our neighborhoods here and make sure it's a great project if it's going to happen. But we are still waiting on that to happen as far as the direction.
Can I tell them it's going to happen?
And we're getting reports of people saying that the roads around Arlington Park are being widened.
Already?
Other things as well, yes. Those are the reports that are coming in.
Local journalism.
Or at least that there is road work being done. How about that? So, and that's coming from people who text us and let us know here at The Score. I think this comes down to just more process that has to happen before they get the go on planning, zoning, that type of deal.
Yeah, but as you said, formalities.
Correct.
It's just part of the process.
Well, no, I mean, zoning wouldn't be an issue because it's already zoned for that. So perhaps what is around it as well.
Yeah, because they're going to build like a mini city with many businesses, with many, and I say many, it's a homophone type deal, M-I-N-I-N-M-A-N-Y.
All of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. RUSS, Russ Dorsey is next. We'll talk a little baseball, a lot of Cubs news to get to, and also an appearance he made last week on MLB Network with Rick Hahn. That's next on The Score.